is a large project that comes at the right time. This will stimulate economic development, both in the short term with jobs because of the construction of this project, but also in the long term as we educate folks and as this becomes a center of research activity. Of course, it's also here to address our workforce issues in healthcare and the pipeline for healthcare at Portland State. I can tell you we're very excited to be able to expose our students as they're just entering that pipeline to students at different stages in that pipeline. And we intend to foster multidisciplinary education in the health professions so that people can see different elements of the health professions and life sciences professions. And finally, as Patrick mentioned, there's an opportunity to bring in private industry, and we are exploring that opportunity and looking for opportunities to bring in private industry that can co-develop with us and leverage our research and expertise. A little bit about who's going to be in the building and some of the programmatic elements, and we'll kind of share this slide a little bit. At Portland State, we will do predominantly our undergraduate biology and chemistry, two of our largest programs, and also our anatomy and physiology program. We'll have a 500-seat lecture auditorium in this building. Currently, we teach in about a 250-seat space, and this will allow us to really leverage our faculty and pipeline more students through. And I think Dave will talk a little bit about OSU.
Thanks. Dave Bearden from Oregon State University College of Pharmacy, here representing the dean of the College of Pharmacy as well. Just to follow up, we're currently a program that offers a joint degree in pharmacy with Oregon State University and Oregon Health Sciences University. And so we've already started some of these partnerships already. And this building will actually allow us to move all of our academic centers in with the OHSU medical, dental, and allied health programs, and actually allow our students to be co-housed in the same building, which I think will be a great advance from the training and the healthcare side. In addition, we have some research labs there, and I think the collaborations that are available in that center will be beneficial across all three institutions. On the OHSU side, has been involved peripherally, and I'll throw things off if there's any other questions on that side. But from the OHSU side, the first 2 years of the School of Medicine will actually move into that building, as will the complete dentistry program, the radiation therapy program. There is an advanced imaging facility that is a large investment in the research infrastructure that will be housed in that building, as well as associated research labs across the different colleges and centers from OHSU. The OHSU Skirties Tower will actually compose the entire dental school, and when you see the design, it makes a little bit more sense how it fits in there, but we'll have the entire dental training program as well as clinic space and research labs from the dental program.
Thank you. I want to just talk briefly about the funding for this project. The funding in sort of very broad brushstrokes is $110 million in state bonds. OHSU funding is $92 million, and that includes some of the dollars that Patrick mentioned from PDC. OHSU has also got substantial philanthropy that have made this entire project possible, $83 million in gifts. And then also TriMet is a partner in this project with $10 million, although I should say that the $10 million from TriMet are dollars that really are invested in TriMet's assets and stations and adjacent components next to the building, but will need to be sort of co-constructed with the building for a total of $295 million as a total project, one of the largest projects we've done.
And that's for the building?
That is for the building, correct.
So the City of Portland isn't actually contributing to the building?
I think that is correct. Maybe I'll defer to Brian to kind of comment on that.
Sure. The 295 includes the TriMet station work. So if you're just talking about the building, it's 285, and none of that is City of Portland funding. Now, the funds that Patrick was referring to related to the parking is not included in that $285 million.
Right. So that wasn't pretty much our contribution, and we've already done that.
Yeah. And I don't want to underplay the city's involvement. I think Patrick laid a very correct and accurate framework about how we got here and how we got to the point of being able to develop a project like this. I mean, if it wasn't for all the transportation planning and all the development of that whole surrounding area, we wouldn't be sitting here today doing this big project. So to me, this is an example of what happens when you have an urban renewal area that works in a coordinated effort and coordinated planning, and then you can get to projects that are really standing on their own. So
I want to just concur with that. I was on the Planning Commission when the concept plan went through, and it is evidence that when the city puts in the infrastructure for transportation, that then private investment and leveraging state and other dollars and philanthropy, now we're going to have a close to $300 million building going up there.
Absolutely, absolutely. A little bit on our project timeline. We have been going through already the design and the construction documentation that's underway now. We will begin tomorrow is the groundbreaking, and we'll actually begin work on foundation elements tomorrow. Hope to see you all there, if you can make it down there through all the construction going on. We'll be working on interiors by April of 2012, very rapid start. And, in fact, the elements that Portland State is involved in, some of our large classrooms, will be online by late summer of 2013. And so we're really looking to start fall term 2013 with this building. So this is a great big building that's going to go up very quickly. The final elements of it will complete in spring of 2014. And we are pursuing a LEED Platinum building here. We've incented the team to achieve LEED Platinum. We have contractually committed to gold, and we hope to get to platinum. This slide just indicates a couple of the elements that we're going to work toward to get there. And now I'll pass to Brian.
Thank you. I'll cover some of this stuff pretty quickly because I think we might be taking up too much time. Just alluding to what Mayor Adams already said in his complimenting the leadership of Mayor Katz. It wasn't just Mayor Katz, of course. It was the entire city council that in 2002 created the Science and Technology Quarter, which then became the Innovation Quadrant. And it was all about not just the physical connections, the ones that Councillor Fritz alluded to, the transportation, but it was programmatic as well. And so first there was a conversation at the program level between all of our deans and our provosts, and then that begot other physical connections in the form of this building. And so it's all a partnership, as has already been discussed. If you looked at any site in the city and try to find some place where this partnership should take place, it's really here at this site, which is the southwest corner of our brand new campus, the Snitzer campus. It's at the nexus of the transportation connections. That light rail connection, which opens in 2015, is going to be key because of the hundreds of students that have to get back and forth between PSU and our new building between classes. I think they've got maybe 10 minutes to do that. So they're going to be rushing, but we're going to make that possible. And so that site is real key for OHSU as well because it's within a short walking distance of the tram, which is the front door now, if you will. All you have to do is go down there and see all the bike parking everywhere, and you see that it's a front door for a lot of people for OHSU. And so that partnership really was key for OHSU in leveraging our expansion in the South Waterfront. You may have recalled, may recall from a couple years ago, in 2008, we presented our new master plan. This rendering was done before this building was designed, and so it doesn't show the new building, but it's 2.5 million square feet vision, 70% of that institutional, about 30% private. And so the first building, as I already mentioned, is that southwest corner right on the light rail. And so we're excited to actually follow through on that commitment and start construction of our new campus. And actually, this building represents what we had referred to as phase one and two. We were just lucky enough to build them both at the same time. And already, the way things work at OHSU, we're already talking about phase three. And so stay tuned over the next year or two for that conversation. When we first started sitting down with the design team about the concept of this building, it wasn't just about the phase one and two. Originally, these were buildings that were going to be built right next to each other. It turned out that phase two ended up being built right on top of phase one. But the real concept was that co-educational environment between the undergraduates, the pharmacy students, the medical students, the dentistry students, and creating a real mixing area in the center of this building where everybody has to pass through. And that's really the vision. This is an early sketch that later got translated into the program. The design of the building, which I'll talk about more in detail in a minute. But this early sketch, which is creating that light-filled atrium with lecture halls in the center of it and the gathering spaces for our students, including a lounge and a library for students, was one of the strong things that everyone supported through the design process. Just we'll mention that we're consistent with the zoning of South Waterfront. We're below the allowable FAR, and we've obviously paid close attention to those issues, and we've gotten the support of the South Portland Neighborhood Association's Land Use Committee that have strongly endorsed this project and testified in support of it at the Design Commission. As far as the programming, this is how it's all arranged on the site. It's that large atrium in the middle with the lecture halls and some community life spaces for our students. The South Tower, or South Bar as we sometimes refer to it,
is really office and simulation, including high-tech simulation, where dental students, medical students, nursing students are all going to be in close proximity going through the simulation that prepares them for their professional careers. The North Tower is where all the hard infrastructure is. That's really where a lot of the money is. It's in the teaching labs for PSU, the research labs for Oregon State and OHSU, as well as our dental clinic. And a big part of the dental school is actually working on patients. And for the final 2 years that they're with us, they're seeing patients and with their proctors, and they're learning hands-on in one of the last professions where it's really that mentorship apprentice role. Here's a cut.
What's a vivarium?
Oh, I'm sorry. On the very bottom, there's the microscopy lab and the vivarium. The vivarium is animal holding for rats and mice for the most part. It's all rats and mice in this building. And then the microscopy is really, that's an extraordinarily expensive, low vibration imaging facility that was key in attracting Dr. Joe Gray from Lawrence Berkeley Laboratories to the Portland metro area. Not just him, his entire research team, and they're going to be housed in this building. They're now working out of temporary quarters on the Hill, but they'll be moving to this building along with the new OHSU Center for Spatial Systems Biomedicine, which I couldn't tell you what they do, but it sounds important. Here's a cut through of the building, and you can see that atrium space, and I'll have a rendering of it in a minute. And that's the real key, you know, amazing space that we're real excited about, and it was a key part of the design. And you can see the lecture halls kind of floating in space above the atrium. Here's a cut through looking at the other direction between the North Tower and the South Bar with the underground parking down below. As far as the site, we paid very close attention to all the guidelines with the South Waterfront plan and the design, and we've worked with Carol Mayer Reed, who's a real pro in not just designing the exterior of the building, but pulling a lot of that design, the treatment of our new promenade, which is on the east side of the right hand of the image, into the building itself, and then flowing out onto a terrace on the west side. The building is extremely transparent and porous. We've got entries all over the place. At the peak times, there's going to be 2,000 students leaving and arriving for those classes, and so we need to be able to accommodate that and accommodate their connections to streetcar and light rail. This shows kind of those pedestrian connections as it flows through the building from the street through the west terrace, through the atrium space, and, of course, the future promenade that will link our future buildings to the north and to the east. Real key, this being Portland, we're providing 400 parking spaces. 150 of them are covered, and in fact, those 150 could be expanded up to 300 if we decide with resources to move to double-decker bike parking, which there's systems out there, vendors that sell those. And then there's about 250 surface spaces all spread around. And as I mentioned already, all you have to do is go down to the Center for Health and Healing and see, looks like Amsterdam down there some days, to see how heavily those bike spaces are used. We've had to add them almost every fiscal year since that building opened because of the demand.
But do you think 400 is going to be enough?
We don't know. We think it's, I mean, it's almost, it's, we're providing about 400 parking spaces as well. So it's, I think it's probably one of the first buildings in the region where it, of this magnitude, 650,000 square feet, where it's a one-to-one ratio.
It's actually even less. According to your numbers, there's fewer car spaces than there are bike spaces.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible. Yeah.
Well,
that's definitely needed, as you
and
say,
we
when
can
you look at it.
Exactly. We can expand. We can add another 150, as I mentioned, if we go to double-stacked bike parking in the covered area, and then we can always add on the promenade as well.
Okay, thank you.
And we've done that with CHH. Here's the automobile parking. We're at a 0.8 ratio, which is well below our allowed. Oh, I'll go back, actually. We're allowed a 2.4 per thousand. We're only providing 0.8 per thousand, and so it's only a third of what we're allowed. And so we're going to be heavily relying on transit, not just for the students, but for the people who work in this building and the patients who arrive to go to the dental clinic.
So how much of the auto parking is for employees versus visitors?
You know, we haven't allocated them. We know that of that, probably about 150 will be patient and visitor parking, and then the remainder could be split between hourly as well as permit parking. But we don't have a specific allocation yet. That's one of the things where Mark and I and other folks at our institutions are working on.
And does the rule that's on the Hill that the employee parking has to pay for itself, does that apply in South Waterfront?
Well, we use a market rate to charge. It doesn't quite pay for itself because of the cost of the facilities and operating them. They're not subsidized in the sense where we try to match the market, the downtown market in this case, for the monthly parkers, and that's what we do on Markham Hill as well. And so that'll be no different.
Thank you.
As far as the first floor active uses, which is real important with the Design Commission and others, and I will mention, I forgot to mention earlier, that we are in front of Design Commission right now. So the images I'm showing you, they can change, of course, and we're being responsive right now with some of their early comments. The purple on the south and on the east, you're looking northeast, is retail, ground floor retail. There's about between 6,000 and 7,000 square feet of retail. The red on the upper left is the dental clinic lobby, which is right on the street. And then you have teaching classrooms for PSU on the north side as well. And, of course, the atrium itself is an active use, of course, that meets the code as well, and it'll be very active with the thousands of students that we're going to be having. So here's a rendering, which you already have in front of you, I'm sure you've already looked at, of the building at night as it could look, as it currently designed. And, of course, we're going through design review, so this will change a bit. I will say that when it came to this project, we hired Sarah Architects here in Portland, and they teamed up with co-architects out of Los Angeles, and we gave them the charge. You know, this is a new century, a new campus, a new partnership with the Oregon University System. We want this architecture to achieve a high level of design excellence, but also to be future-focused and really capture the possibility of discovery, of collaboration, and all of that, and we think that they've achieved that. I'll walk you through the building real quick on the exterior, and then we can take your questions. Here is a kind of a shot of the transit station. The bottom is just a printout of our Revit model, which is kind of the way buildings are designed these days. The top is what it looks once it's rendered by a professional renderer, showing the transit and showing the trees and everything else. Here is that floating object on the east side, which is actually the 200-seat lecture hall for our dental school. It sits above the atrium and above the promenade and above that main entrance, and it's actually clad in wood that's protected. But it'll be a real interesting mix of materials that we haven't seen in the South Waterfront and in many parts of Portland. And I think it'll be stunning when it's actually completed. Here is that same look rendered by the renderer with people and trees and everything else. Close-up of that entrance. Here is the looking from the northeast at the Skurdy's Tower, and that's looking at mostly the research labs as well as the dental clinic from above. The dental clinic, which because it's students with proctors and because you may go there for 45 minutes for a procedure that might take that with a regular dentist 15. It's lower cost, but it'll have the most gorgeous views of any dental clinic in the region from the top four or five floors of this tower. So I encourage you to check it out if you have the opportunity to. Here's a close-up of the promenade. The promenade, as I already mentioned, is one of the strongest design elements of this new campus. It's a pedestrian. It'll have a public easement over it, of course, for bicyclists and pedestrians. And it's really going to be the armature that links all of our future buildings from the north and provide that north-south connection. And here's the look from the south southwest. And actually what you can see there on the very bottom, I'll kind of do a close-up. There's no place for me to show a pointer, but on the top image all the way to the right, you see this little entrance there. That's the entrance to the bike parking, and it's right across from the new cycle track that's part of the Moody Street design. So that cycle track, which I know is real important to include in that design, and we support it strongly, have a direct connection into the bike parking there. But that image of the building, this is my favorite because it kind of captures the architecture. And the focus of that South Tower is really about the collaboration and the simulation that's going on in inside. Here's a quick look at the rendering or picture
what's
of the
building called?
I'm sorry?
Commissioner Salzman refers to it as the Ark. What is that building called?
It does have kind of a nautical look to it. What is it? What's going on inside? Is that the question?
What is it called?
Oh, well, this whole thing is the Collaborative Life Sciences building. And
that's
Skurdy's
South
We call it the South Bar.
The South Bar, South if you bar. Will. Yeah. Yeah. But it's a component.
It's a prelude to the retail we intend to put in.
Oh, great. Nothing mixes better.
Put the vivarium on the ground floor, too.
Well, that's an active use as well, right?
There you go.
We made sure to put human anatomy on the second floor people didn't see into that. So here's the look at the atrium, and you can see the lecture hall kind of floating in space, and that the north tower and the south bar are connected by bridges going back and forth between each floor. And so it's a real mixing ground, as I mentioned, between students, researchers, professors, and even dental clinic patients. And here's a look from the fifth floor looking down through the atrium, and you get a glimpse of what it might look like. Of course, there's a lot more design work that needs to be done, particularly on the interiors. But it's filled with light, that there's a glass roof that provides a lot of light into that space. Let me close by just saying a few challenges that we're working through. We're not seeking any kind of intervention on the part of the council. That's not the point. I just wanted to let you know that we're working through a couple of issues with PBOT, and we've had a lot of great response from them. One is the access from Mead. Mead has designated an enhanced pedestrian street, and when that was done, it was before Porter was designated, as I recall, the transitway for light rail. And so it's a challenge now because there's no auto access from Porter, from Moody, because of the streetcar and our promenade. And so one of the things we're looking at whether to seek an exception or look at an amendment is the designation of Mead as an enhanced pedestrian street, and because that's the only location where we can have the entrance to our parking garage and the entrance to our loading dock. And so we're working with PBOT staff on that issue right now, and just want to let you know we're working on it. Second issue is the Moody Street remnant. I won't go into a lot of detail, but we also had a great working relationship with PBOT and others at the city. When Moody is rebuilt, there will be not just the 15-foot sidewalk on the east side of Moody Street. There's going to be a 25-foot right-of-way gap between the street and between our building. Now, we're going to be building out that gap as part of a frontage improvement, but it's almost a 40-foot setback from the street. And we've gone through a process with the city engineer and with city staff to figure out, well, what is a unified design treatment? Because it's not just our block. It's four or five blocks that is affected by. And there's no on-street parking on Moody, so it's not going to be quite a retail frontage. So we want to figure out a way we can still activate that street, but do it in such a way that addresses that large setback. And so we're working, as I mentioned, with Carol Mayer Reed, who's a landscape architect, and others, to kind of figure out what are the guidelines. We've drafted them with PBOT, and those have gone through the design review process. The design commission has approved those, and now we're incorporating those guidelines into the design of this building. But I just wanted to allude to it because it's one of the areas that we're working very closely with PBOT on. And I think that's it. That's all I wanted to cover. And if you have any questions for the three of us, just say that has already been mentioned. We couldn't do this without the city and the participation of the Portland Development Commission, PBOT, TriMet, and others. Because of all the construction that's happening, that's allowing us to be able to develop this site. And it's not an exaggeration at all to say that this would not be happening without all of that infrastructure improvement. And that's a testament to the partnership that we've had and we will continue to have between the city of Portland and our respective universities.
So I have just one question. Thank you very much for the presentation. When some of the elements of this are reminiscent of the Oregon Sustainability Center, particularly the partnership between the various jurisdictions and the universities. And in that project, one of the elements I particularly appreciated was the promotion of minority contractors, both for the design work and for the construction. Right. Has there been some consideration of that kind of partnership in this project?
Absolutely. Our contractor is J.E. Dunn Construction, and they have a very aggressive plan that mirrors the standards that we established for the Central District and the South Waterfront to reaching out on you may know better than I, Mayor Adams, about Project Apprenticeship and other programs, but they know that there's a high expectation on the part of all three of our universities to achieve and lead on that issue, and so they're implementing that plan right now. I've seen a draft of it, but I think it's still working through the process and getting the appropriate review by our respective universities.
Thank you.
Yeah, South Waterfront is the worked out under Mayor Potter. South Waterfront has some of the most ambitious equity goals for workforce and contracting, and my understanding as well
and
is
mentorship.
And mentorship that this carries forward to this project as well. I also want to thank the Oregon Department of Transportation that we worked with to reprogram some money for a different project into the knitting, as I call it, the transportation and the Tiger Grant, so the federal government's granting of those things. If you haven't been down there, I really encourage it. We're literally, the street is, we have to raise the street 14 feet.
Up to 14, yeah.
So right now it looks very odd. But we're hopeful that it'll look better.
Especially when there's a big building on it, yeah.
Yeah. So thank you all very much. And I apologize. I focused entirely on OHSU, and I forgot this is a collaborative building with OSU. It's great to have more of the Beavers in Portland.
We try.
And, of course, it's a key new spot of the PSU campus as well. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That was a presentation, and no action required. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance 1088?
Authorized revenue bonds for emergency coordination center project.
Hi, welcome back.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And my name is Jonas Beery, debt manager for the city. Certainly won't have the zip and pizzazz in my presentation as the prior presentation, but in my line of business, bland and conservative is actually very exciting.
So, low risk.
The ordinance before you authorizes issuance of up to $5.65 million limited tax revenue bonds. They'll be used to finance a portion of costs for the city's Emergency Coordination Center, or ECC. In total, ECC construction costs are paid from a variety of sources, including Water Bureau resources, proceeds from public safety GO bonds that were issued earlier this year, and from available cash. The proceeds of the proposed bonds represent the final funding component for the ECC project. The bonds will be secured by the full faith and credit of the city, including the general fund, but payment of the bonds will be made through the Facilities Services Fund, which receives money from each city bureau via existing interagency agreements. The bonds will mature over not more than 15 years, with annual debt service estimated at approximately $490,000 per year. We expect to sell the bonds via competitive bidding process in December. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, to say this is another step that, you know, stands on the shoulders of Commissioner Leonard's work with the bond measure. So it's a component of that, but separate from the bond measure revenue. So I want to thank you, Commissioner Leonard. And next time, I want you to practice to say it with great emotion, because this is a big deal. It's a good big deal. Questions from council? Discussion? Move to a second reading. Further consideration next week. Can you please read the title and call the vote for 1089?
Authorized long-term bonds for local improvement, system development charge, and sidewalk repair projects. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you to Jonas Beery, both for the previous one and for explaining to me further on this one. I really appreciate the solid staff work. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Thank you, Mr. Beery. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for 1091, Emergency Ordinance?
Authorize a request for proposal for a permitting, plan review, and inspections management software system.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This ordinance is an administrative step that authorizes a competitive bidding invitation to bid for our new permitting and plan review management software, also known as the Information Technology Advancement Project, or ITAP. As you all know, the Bureau of Development Services current permitting system hinders our ability to really effectively and serve our customers and our residents to our best ability. And we are hopeful that through this request for proposals, we will receive the best assurance that the technology and the company we eventually choose for our new system will serve us well. And here to explain more is BDS Director Paul Scarlett and his team.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Paul Scarlett, BDS Director, Mayor Adams, and Commissioners. Very excited to continue working on the improvement or technology for customers and employees to better utilize technology, improve their work. And we have been at this for 2 years. and continue to find and seek efficiencies. Commissioner Leonard, as was mentioned before, who has initiated a number of initiatives, this is one of the pieces that we, as part of our reorganization as a result of the economic crisis and having to retool our organization through reduction of staff, identify that technology could get us further. With Commissioner Salzman, we have continued to capitalize on that opportunity and have come here with this authorization to pursue an open competitive bid process, essentially to reinforce that we are, in fact, haven't lost the sight of the objective to improve our technology for our customers and our employees, and want to have on a platform the ability for vendors to, in a competitive way, show us how they can meet our goals. And so this is a step in that direction, which is to authorize moving forward with the RFP. There are a lot of technical pieces to it, but I think the big part is our goal to provide more access, to make it easier, to make it more efficient for employees, customers, industry partners, and in fact, to be keeping pace with the changes in technology that's occurred over a period of time. We are providing service to the best of our abilities. We have a system that's about 12 years old, and we've had adjustments made to it over a period of time. But again, folks cannot submit plans from their home or office. They have to come to the bureau. That seems outdated. You know, you're talking about sustainability and trying to reduce vehicle miles travel. We're unable to reduce paper because we can't do electronic plan review, et cetera, you know. So
is this in lieu of joining the state system, just so I understand?
We are wanting to move forward with the opportunity to allow for that should it, as we continue to evaluate this, be in our best interest. We want to have the ability to have...
We're testing that option.
That option. Sole source versus... Correct.
I think we're all interested in the best option. So that you're going to compare that against everything else. Okay.
That's the bottom line, yes.
Okay, and as you do that, integration is key, and so integration back to the SAP, or opportunities to integrate with SAP, opportunities to integrate with there's a public face as part of the RFP, right? So
yes,
the general public is considered one of the constituents or customers. Yeah,
that's right. A lot of interfacing.
Okay.
With this.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other council discussion?
Hank had something to say.
Yeah, Hank's.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I would just like to throw a couple of things out there. To get right at your question, Mayor Adams, Section 1, Item 2 specifically discusses our commitment to integration and or being a full-service jurisdiction of the state of Oregon, whichever we feel will provide us the best solution for our business needs, but as well as integration with the state system. A couple of other things I wanted to point out was the estimated costs under Section 1, Subsection 4. It's important to note that the costs that are reflected here are not the overall information technology advancement project costs. These are just the costs that will be associated with the execution of this RFP and subsequent contract. So I want to make sure that we are very clear about that. There are a number of other components to the information technology advancement project that are not reflected in this RFP itself. We're very anxious to continue forward. We continue to work on process mapping, and we're also working on all the technical requirements. We're going to enter into a discussion of weighting of those technical requirements shortly, as soon as we get finished with our initial draft of the RFP, and we look forward to coming back to council probably in about a month with that RFP.
So, sorry, a lot of distractions today. So this is an RFP to test out platforms, state versus other sort of general platforms for our automation, however you want to describe it, of the whole system. And then the RFP to follow is a is, can you describe that part?
Well, this is an enabling ordinance directing the, or authorizing the Bureau of Development Services to enter into a public bid announcement for a platform, for a replacement technology.
What's the next one? You said there's something coming back to council in a month. I'm sorry.
Well, I may have misspoken, because the minute I said that, I thought, you know, we don't come back to council with the draft of the RFP itself. We will be going to the Technology Oversight Committee. However, the procurement officer at the end of this process will be coming back to council with a recommendation for award.
Yes. Okay.
I apologize that I misspoke there.
No, that makes sense.
Richard's also here for any technical questions that may be answered.
All right, Richard, any questions for Richard? All right, anyone wish to testify on this matter? It's an emergency ordinance.
No one signed up.
All right, then please call the vote.
Leonard?
Well, I know you all are doing an outstanding job on this project, and I appreciate Dan carrying forward with it. It's a very, very important project for the future of BDS. Aye.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for your leadership and your willingness to ensure that the project is done right. Also, thanks to the Development Review Advisory Committee and the Information Technology Oversight Committee for their assistance. Paul and Rich and Hank, thank you so much for your work on this. Very diligent. I'm still not convinced that this is the right time to move forward on this large, expensive software project. The outlook for our next budget is dismal, and development growth over the next few years is still in question. I question whether the line of credit can be paid back as estimated. However, I do understand the importance of this software improvement, and my colleagues here on the council have voted to fund the project. Therefore, it is going forward, and my vote against this project would only delay the inevitable. So in the interests of efficiency and knowing that time is money and that my colleague Commissioner Saltzman has placed this on as an emergency ordinance, I will vote to move forward with the project through the issuance of the RFP. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Leonard, Commissioner Fritz, and for your support. And thank you all for your hard work. And we will keep you posted. Aye.
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency regular ordinance item number 1092?
Revise City Elections Code to update and clarify procedures for measures referred by the Charter Commission.
Hi, Auditor Griffin Valle. Welcome.
Hello.
Back.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. LaVon Griffin Valle, the City Auditor. Here with me today is Ryan Kinsella, the City Elections Officer. So at the recommendation of the City Attorney, we are before you today with a code amendment that will clarify the procedures and process to be used when the Charter Commission refers an amendment directly to voters. And so, as you know, Charter allows for the Charter Commission to refer an amendment to the voters without council approval when at least 15 of their members vote in favor of referring an amendment to the ballot. However, currently, the election code does not address the procedures and timelines for how a charter amendment from the Charter Commission that comes directly from the Charter Commission will appear on the ballot. This code revision clarifies those procedures. So to summarize, what's before you today lays out that after the Charter Commission votes to refer an amendment, they will send the specific text to the auditor's office, and then the auditor's office will submit a report of the amendment to council. After being presented to council, the auditor's office will then forward the amendment to the city attorney's office, who will develop the ballot title and explanatory statement. Lastly, after the ballot title challenge period has passed, the elections officer will send the measure to the counties for certification. Just want to clarify that this particular code was developed collaboratively by Ryan and Deputy City Attorney Lindley Reese, so that the procedures will meet statutory requirements and the requirements of the city charter. So, questions?
So did I hear you say that if it's a action by the Charter Commission with 15 or more votes, it would come to council for, you would present it to council?
What? Yeah, Ryan Kinsella, City Elections Officer. That's correct. With a vote of 15
or more members voting to approve a measure directly to the voters, it would appear it's just as a report to council, and council wouldn't have any action to influence whether or not it goes to the ballot.
Would not have any action.
Would not, yes. Okay.
Just to clarify, we don't yet have a council prescribed process for the public hearing process before that.
That's correct.
Still to be worked out. And do we have a process for if a majority but fewer than 15 of the Charter Commission want to refer something?
If that were the case, then it would probably be filed as a report to council, and then at that point, council could decide if they'd like to refer it to the ballot, and that would follow the city referral procedures.
Thank you.
All right. Any additional council discussion? Does anyone want to testify on this matter? All right, moves to second reading and further consideration next week. Unless I'm mistaken, that's it, right?
Thank you.
We're recessed. We're adjourned.
Or something.
Exactly.
These numbers are great.
Yeah, I mean, it's the worst recession and the worst recovery. And that isn't even...